Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, April 20th, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Mini Golf Revenue Comes Up Short. New Park District Budget Reflects Fewer Rounds, by Justin Kahn, Herald and Review. Decatur. The Decatur Park District tentative budget for the next year shows an unexpected decrease in revenue for the Overlook Adventure mini golf course, though the Nelson Park facility is expected to make more money next year with the addition of a ropes course and batting cages. The Park District's 2017-18 annual budget likely won't be approved in its final form until June. It has to receive preliminary approval from the Decatur Park Board at the May 3rd meeting. Then, the budget ordinance must be on display for 30 days before it can be officially approved by the board. The numbers in what Park District Chief Financial Officer Rodney Burr called the working document show the mini golf course had brought in $161,215.79 through March 23rd. $29,266.01 less than the course made through March 18, 2016. The Park District had budgeted an increase of revenue, $215,000, for the 2016-17 fiscal year. Though the fiscal year doesn't end until May 1st, the course is still likely to finish well below what was budgeted. Next year's budget reflects a drop in revenue for the mini golf course, projecting $175,000 for 2017-18. We knew that any time you open a new facility, you're going to get a spike. Then it's going to level off, said Bill Clevenger, Park District Executive Director. At some point, operations tend to stabilize, and we anticipate 30,000 rounds annually. Some years you're going to have more, and some years you're going to have less because of the weather. Clevenger said the addition of the ropes course and soon batting cages will further help stabilize the mini golf course's business and create more revenue for the area overall. Next year's budget proposal has revenue of $99,000 for the ropes course and $10,500 for the batting cage, which is scheduled to open in mid-May. Use is high with the ropes course right now, and we feel like both of those items will be good revenue producers, Clevenger said. The mini golf course opened at Nelson Park in July 2014 with a more than $3 million price tag. The ropes course opened April 1st and cost $580,000. The batting cages cost $372,240. Both were purchased in part through Open Space Land Acquisition and Development, OSLAD, grants. Burr said overall the amount of changes in the budget compared with last year's budget are limited. Total operating revenues in next year's budget are expected to be $20,000 more than this year's, and expenses $31,000 more, a 0.23% increase. I don't want to say it's not an exciting budget, but there weren't a lot of changes, said Burr, whose office has been working on the budget for 5 months. It's very comparable to what we had last year. Water park update. The park board heard an update on the design of its $9.2 million aquatic center and approved a bid for the slides with the pool company out of Tacoma, Washington. In February, the board picked a preliminary design option that included a water slide package with features not previously seen outside of Europe. That option included 4 slides, but the board asked for bids that included a 3-slide package and alternates for a 4th and 5th slide. Architectural Expressions managing senior partner Lawrence Livergood said the pool company is the North American installation contractor for Clarer Water Slides, the designer of the type of slides that will be featured at the new water park. The 3 slides guaranteed to be in the package are the freestyle standing slide, the infinity jump closed with LED images, and the triple racer 3-lane race slide. Depending on where the budget is at, the Park District is committed to staying below the $9.2 million price tag. The fourth slide would either be the High Fly slide, originally part of the package chosen by the Park District, or the False Start slide, which was described as a high-speed drop slide with a 15-foot drop out a trap door. Another option was to replace the freestanding slide with the Magic Twice slide, a two-lane racing slide with a transparent wall between racers. The purpose of all the alternates is to ensure there's a package here that will meet the budget concerns down the road, Livergood said. These alternate bids stay open for a period of 180 days, so we have time to figure out where the sweet spot of the budget and the interest in the type of ride staff is looking at meet. Dog Park Pavilion approved. Christy Fulce, Inc., a construction company in Decatur, was approved as the contractor for the Nelson Park Dog Park Pavilion and Great Lawn Restrooms. Christy Fulce's bid for the pavilion was $271,613, and the restrooms $161,363. Access to agenda may have violated Open Meetings Act. Township Notice Not Posted 48 Hours in Advance of Meeting, by Ryan Boyles, Herald and Review. Decatur. The Decatur Township Cemetery Board potentially violated the Illinois Open Meetings Act when it failed to post its agenda in public view for at least 48 hours before a controversial meeting Tuesday, according to a media attorney familiar with the act. The three-person cemetery board voted unanimously at the meeting to eliminate the executive director position that oversees Greenwood and two other cemeteries under township control. Don Craven, an attorney for the Illinois Press Association, said the way the notice and agenda were posted raised questions. The notice and agenda must be continuously available for 48 hours, Craven said, and it sounds like they missed the mark on that one. State law requires an agenda for each regular meeting to be posted at the principal office of the public body and at the location where the meeting is to be held at least 48 hours in advance of the holding of the meeting. There is nothing in the Act that says the office or location has to be open during that time, only that the notice and agenda be continuously available for public review during that period. Several residents spoke in support of Cemetery Director Lynn Dixon, who will be laid off as a result of the board's vote to cut his position. Those residents also raised concerns about whether the meeting complied with the Open Meetings Act, but Cemetery Board member Bruce Pillsbury said Tuesday that the agenda was placed on the bulletin boards inside of the township building on Sunday. But with the office closed that day, residents argued that the agenda would not have been available to view until Monday morning. Pillsbury said Wednesday that cemetery trustees consulted with Township Attorney Jeffrey Juergens over the weekend to make sure they were compliant with the Act. Pillsbury said Juergens gave them the go-ahead to post the agenda on Sunday, which Juergens confirmed to the Herald and Review on Wednesday. The Herald and Review sent a request for review by public access counselor to the Illinois Attorney General's office on Wednesday. Herald and Review executive editor Chris Coates said state rules regarding when agendas need to be posted are in place for a reason. The State Open Meetings Act makes sure agendas are posted with plenty of time for the public to attend. It's not clear that happened in this case, he said. We asked the Attorney General's office to look into this because it's a basic obligation of elected officials to communicate what's scheduled to be decided in public meetings at least 48 hours in advance. Pillsbury said the board was not trying to hide their actions, as Tuesday was their regularly scheduled meeting date. Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley said Wednesday she posted the meeting's notice and agenda about 2:20 p.m. Sunday afternoon on the same bulletin boards where she posts all meeting notices. While Stanley said she could see them through the doors, she understood how people might struggle to read the documents from outside the building because of glare on the glass doors. She said in the future she would likely post the notice and agendas directly on the doors. Dixon was hired as cemetery director in 2014. Cemetery board members said they will take a more hands-on approach to managing the cemeteries. Dixon said he was not notified of the possible layoff until Tuesday afternoon, and that he planned to speak with an attorney. Restoring natural state. Sangamon River Cleanup aims to beautify and protect local wildlife. By Justin Kahn, Herald and Review. Decatur. Richie Wolf has a generally good feeling toward his fellow man. He doesn't think most people litter on purpose. I think people respect nature in general, Wolf said. But even then, there's going to be litter. Wolf, the manager at Rock Springs Nature Center, only has to walk down from his office to the nearby cattail ponds to see it. The ponds will be just one of the areas volunteer will focus on at Saturday's annual Sangamon River cleanup. The cleanup will concentrate on the Sangamon River corridor, particularly along the bike path that goes from Rock Springs to Fairview Park and some of the wetland areas at Rock Springs. Everything finds the lowest point, so a lot of trash is funneled into our rivers, Wolf said. It's a lot of things, ranging from pop cans to tires to old discarded toys and toilets. We find a little bit of everything. Basically, anytime it rains, our streets get washed off into the Sangamon. Our goal is to beautify the area by clearing the litter, but we also want to give wildlife clean, safe habitats to live in. Wolf pointed out some cans and bottles floating near the shores of the cattail ponds on Monday. We have some litter getters for that stuff, Wolf said. It's a long-handled grabber. We don't want people in the water at all. Wolf said the litter most dangerous to nature is fishing line. He pointed to several bobbers and lures in trees all around the cattail ponds that were on fishing line. Nesting birds will try to use it as nesting material, Wolf said, and the ducks and geese get it caught in their legs. That's a real tragedy to see a duck or goose all tied up in fishing line. Cub Scout Pack 9999 of Decatur will be among the 70 or so volunteers Wolf is expecting to participate in the cleanup, depending on the weather. The Scout Pack's leader is Chantel Tisch, cousin of Macon County Conservation District Program Services Manager Jeff Tisch. She said the cleanup will help her scouts earn the World Conservation Award, a program designed to make youth members aware that all nations are closely related through natural resources. To get the award, they have to be part of a project, Chantel said. And we're also starting our camping season soon, and we want them to learn Leave No Trace. We want to show them the importance of taking their trash with them to help wildlife thrive and let other people enjoy the land after them. Chantel said she's hoping to have 6 boys total at the cleanup. We have some boys going for the World Conservation Award, and we have some tigers coming out to help to see what they have to do to earn theirs, Chantel said. We really just want all of them to come out, enjoy themselves, learn something, and hopefully see some wildlife while we're out there. The Sangamon River Cleanup is co-sponsored by the Conservation District and Community Environmental Council. A second river cleanup later in the year is a partnership with the Decatur Park District and focuses more on Fairview Park. Sangamon River Cleanup. When? Saturday, 9:30 a.m. to noon. Where? Rock Springs Conservation Area Information Shelter. What? Macon County Conservation District staff will shuttle volunteers to one of 6 sites. Dress to get dirty and bring gloves because supplies are limited. Garbage bags, granola bars, and water will be provided. Who? Anyone can volunteer, but for groups of 10 or more, call 217-423 7708. Other activities. Festival of Spring. In addition to the cleanup, the Conservation District's most attended event of the year, the Festival of Spring, will be held from noon to 4 p.m. on Saturday. The event is free, though canoe rides can be purchased for $2 a person, and pony rides, new this year, are $3 per child. There will also be wagon rides, baby farm animals, crafts, live birds from the Illinois Raptor Center, pond scoops, music, and tours of the Homestead Prairie Farm. Also new this year will be Macon County History Museum Director Nathan Pierce displaying the presidential signatures recently found in the archives. Bird Migration Walk. Also on Saturday, before the cleanup, will be a bird migration walk from 8 to 9 a.m. The Decatur Audubon Society is co-hosting Saturday's events and will have a guide for the walk, during which participants will search for birds migrating through central Illinois this spring. Bring binoculars or borrow some at the event. PANA to thank local heroes. Residents Hope event offers comfort to first responders. By Sharon Barricklow for the Herald and Review. PANA. PANA residents are hoping an appreciation event on Saturday will provide some comfort to emotionally tired first responders after three fatal fire deaths in the first 2 weeks of April. Local organizations are sponsoring a thank you for PANA firefighters, police officers, dispatchers, and EMS crews at 2 p.m. Saturday at the Chautauqua Building in Kitchell Park in PANA. First responders will be served a meal and have a meet and greet with area residents. The community event comes after 2-year-old Elania Emerson and her little brother, 3-month-old Keith Emerson, were killed in an April 2nd fire that destroyed their family home. Their parents, Brian Emerson, 29, and Ashia Emerson, 20, were both hospitalized with burns after trying to save the children. Less than a week later, on April 8th, John E. Byers, 43, died in a house fire investigators say was caused by discarded smoking materials. The three deaths come on the heels of a rash of arson fires in empty buildings throughout the community. One PANA businessman said emergency responders need community support. It's been a hard time for the community, and especially for the responders, said Kent Sims, a former firefighter who has a son, Tyler, who now serves as an on-call firefighter for PANA. I know from my experience that you never unsee the things you've seen in a bad accident or fire. It stays with you the rest of your life. PANA Fire Chief Ron Bland said his 34 firefighters have responded to more than 300 calls in 2017 and 809 fire and emergency calls in 2016. The other day, we had 6 call-outs in one day, he said. It takes a toll. Sims said he hoped Saturday's event would give residents a chance to express their gratitude and for first responders to feel appreciated. We all need to depend on each other, he said. Forsyth TIF District proposed. AIM is to spur development of Prairie Winds U.S. 51 corridor. By Allison Petty, Herald and Review. Forsyth. The village of Forsyth is moving to establish a tax increment financing district to spur residential and commercial development on the village's north side. The village's Board of Trustees voted 4-1 Monday to enter into a professional services agreement with TIF Illinois of Bloomington to study the proposed area and determine which parcels are eligible. Trustee Steve Hubbard voted against the measure. Trustee Kirsten Trachtenberg was absent. The purpose of the district would be to spur residential development in the Prairie Winds area on the northwest side of the village, and commercial development along the U.S. 51 corridor, said Andrew Zupkoff, Community and Economic Development Coordinator for the village. The 190-acre Prairie Winds area, which includes the village's public works facility and Maroa Forsyth Grade School, has been owned by the village for decades, Zupkoff said. About 138 acres remain undeveloped. We've just been hoping and waiting that would get developed into residential, or really anything, but it hasn't, Zupkoff said. The proposed TIF would also sweep through the village's old downtown and encompass a number of vacant properties, about 85 acres worth, according to Zupkoff, lining US 51, mostly north of Weaver Road. Retail, restaurants, a supermarket, especially, is pretty much the number one thing on the want list for everyone in the village. So we're really hoping to leverage a supermarket out of this TIF, Zupkoff said. TIF districts were established by state law as a tool that local governments can use to create economic growth in certain areas. Here's how it works. When a district is established, the property value at the time is considered the base amount. The city, school district, and other taxing bodies continue to collect property taxes on this amount. If the property value rises because of new developments or improvements, the property owner pays higher taxes. However, those proceeds, the taxes paid on the difference or increment, are put into a special fund that can be used either to reimburse a developer for certain costs or to invest in infrastructure for the area, as the city of Decatur did for its downtown several years ago. The area chosen for a TIF must meet certain criteria laid out in state law, which is generally meant to identify blighted or underperforming areas. The maximum life of a TIF district is 23 years, although municipalities can choose to end them before then. Hubbard, whose last meeting as a trustee was Monday, said he voted against the measure because he wanted the Maroa Forsyth School District to benefit from increased property values in the Prairie Winds area. He thought the village could take other steps to encourage that development without depriving the school district of greater property tax revenues. We're healthy enough as a village that I think we could do things on our own, maybe put the infrastructure in ourselves versus using any kind of TIF money to do that, he said. The board could vote to establish the district as soon as August, according to a timeline distributed to board members. The village's agreement with the consultant calls for a base fee of $30,000 to establish the TIF, as well as a per-parcel surcharge of $15 after the first 150 parcels. This would be the first TIF district ever established by the village, Zupkoff said. The city of Decatur has 7, according to its most recent report to the Illinois Comptroller's Office. Moody's to review ISU, EIU. Credit ratings scrutinized in wake of state's continuing woes, by Lenore Sabata, Herald and Review News Service. Normal. Moody's Investment Service is reviewing Illinois State University and 5 other schools for a possible rating downgrade, but university officials are confident ISU can retain its current rating. Moody said the review was prompted by the state's failure to enact a budget providing full operating funding to the university for the current fiscal year. The review affects about $2.2 billion of university debt, according to an announcement from Moody's. Greg Ault, retiring vice president for finance and planning at ISU, said Wednesday, "We feel confident we'll hold the rating." Ault said Moody's reviews universities regularly, but it's just a little more formal review this time. The rating affects existing and future debt. If ISU's rating is downgraded, the cost of borrowing money is higher, Ault said. The university is not doing any capital projects requiring new debt, he said, and funding is already in place for the planned Bone Student Center renovation. However, Ault said, we're beginning work on refinancing the Cardinal Court project. We would like to proceed with that by fall. A downgrade would impact that, but, Ault emphasized, we'd still be able to issue debt. were still investment grade. ISU has a rating of BAAA1 for Auxiliary Facilities System Revenue Bonds and BAA2 for Certificates of Participation. The Auxiliary Facilities Bonds received a higher rating because they involve restricted funds for residential and athletics facilities, Alt explained. The certificates are covered by general revenue, which is more affected by state funding. Among the state's public universities, only the University of Illinois has a higher rating from Moody's than ISU. The U of I is part of the review announced Monday, as are Eastern Illinois, Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois, and Governor's State Universities. Northeastern Illinois University's certificates of participation were downgraded from BAA2 to B1 on Monday by Moody's. The review will include budgeted fiscal year 2018 operations and assumptions and an assessment of near-debt service commitments against pledged revenues and related reserves, according to Moody's. Some schools could see their ratings drop by more than one notch, depending on liquidity and ongoing ability to adjust to the prolonged lack of state operating funding, Moody's said. Alt's optimism about ISU's rating relates to its steady enrollment and contingency plans the university has developed, even if state funding is delayed or reduced, he said. We're able to demonstrate how we're managing the situation, said Alt. Duan Lewis pleads not guilty in baby's death, Herald and Review staff report, Decatur. Duan Lewis, 23, of Decatur, who is charged with first-degree murder in the death of 5-month-old Dania Lewis on March 28th, entered a plea of not guilty Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court. Lewis, a parolee who is being held without bond in the Macon County Jail, was assigned to Assistant Public Defender Karen Root as his trial attorney. State's Attorney Jay Scott and Assistant State's Attorney Kay Kurtz will serve as prosecutors in the case. On March 23rd, Decatur Fire Department's EMTs called for police assistance after responding to a call and finding an unresponsive baby in an East Side home, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Eric Ethel. Physicians who initially treated Dania at Decatur Memorial Hospital told police that the results of a CAT scan showed Dania possibly suffered head trauma, the affidavit said. Dania never regained consciousness and was pronounced dead March 28th at HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield, where she had been airlifted for specialized emergency treatment. A pretrial hearing for Lewis is scheduled for May 16th. Briefs. Decatur, Earth Day discussion to be held. The Green Team of Decatur First United Methodist Church will hold 3 free Earth Day discussions from 2 to 3:30 p.m. on April 23rd, 30th, and May 7th at the church, 201 North Street, Decatur. The sessions will address environmental concerns and solutions posed by energy conservation, water scarcity, and food production. Refreshments and child care will be provided. For information, call Sarah Buchan at 217-413-9146 or visit the event's webpage at www.decaturfirstumc.org/green-team.html. Decatur, parade entries sought for May 20th. Entries are being sought for Ameren Illinois Armed Forces and First Responders Parade at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 20th, in downtown Decatur. A ceremony will be held in Central Park following the parade. To enter parade, visit ameren.com/-illinois/site/files/home/2017parade form.pdf. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review for Thursday, April 20th, 2017. Please stay tuned.